Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uuridgewood.org.
Good morning. It's a real pleasure to be with you here for a few minutes just to reflect together and tell you a bit of my own story. So I first of all want to make sure to thank Steve and Ron and musicians and everybody for helping to coordinate this morning. Some of my best seminary friends have preached in this pulpit before, folks like Rachel Hayes and Jess Halperin. And at Union Theological Seminary, your hospitality has become somewhat legendary, so I'm glad to be here. And I'm glad that the hospitality extends also to accommodating somebody in the danger of any moment having to flee for the birth of my baby. My wife is 38 and a half weeks pregnant today, so she's very pregnant. And I am glad that, if nothing else, I've ensure that this congregation has an emergency sermon under glass with a sign that says, in case of preaching emergency, please break glass. So I grew up in a big UU church in Arlington, Virginia. So being in this space with the chalice and the hymns feels very familiar. I've been singing "May Nothing Evil Cross This Door" since I was five. It feels instantly, intensely familiar, like coming home, to be in this space with you. But I know that's not everybody's story. It wasn't my mother's story. She, like a lot of people, had a story when she was living of being a person who found her way from something else to Unitarian Universalism. Her story is one of those stories. Maybe some of yours are those stories too. And I think, in a sense, my story is one of those stories. Except that the place I left was my UU church, and the place I found my way to was the Episcopal Church. Now that makes it a little strange for me to be here and not, say, half a block down the street at Christ Church. But like I said, it does feel something like coming home. But it's weird. As they say, some of my best friends are UUs. On the one hand, I have a lot at stake in the thriving and flourishing of communities like this one. On the other hand, there's not much I can tell you anymore about how to do that. I have a lot at stake in this being the best UU community it can be. But on the other hand, I haven't been around for a while. So what I can offer you, I think, this morning is a little bit of testimony, a little bit of my own story and reflection. And that story starts with my mom. My late mom grew up in northeast Oklahoma in a little town about 30 miles from the nearest village, which was about 40 miles from the nearest town, which was about 100 miles from the nearest city. She and her family attended the local Baptist church. Now, there are some great Baptist churches, some faithful and free ones, but this place, at least as my mother experienced it, was about social control. There was no drinking, there was no dancing, there was certainly no sex. When she was 18, she graduated high school and spent the next year lacing boots in a factory that had a contract with the Air Force. She went to secretarial school at night and then came east, where she worked up the secretarial pool and ended up working in the White House and traveling the world. There was dancing. There was drinking. There was probably sex. And my mother, who had never been out of the state until she was 18, much less been out of the country, or met a gay person in her hometown or in her home state, or met a gay person until she was 35, she ended up meeting David, on a flight to Paris. He was her first gay friend. He was maybe her best friend. Now, this was in about 1970, at the very beginning of the modern movement for gay rights. But Mom and David became best friends and stayed best friends until he died of AIDS in 1991. When I was born, when my little sister was born, she hadn't been to church since she was a teenager. But she wanted us to grow up with something, so she toured church after church after church and ended up UU. For my mother, it was important that she could choose what to believe, that she could make her own judgments about what things about God it was plausible and necessary to think. And she wanted those things for her children. I grew up in a household where choosing was my sovereign right, and where we took ourselves to be freely choosing the things that we did choose. The thing that was great about our UU church was the thing that was great about America, the freedom to choose. Now, I don't know if that story sounds familiar. I suspect for that at least some of you, it does. My mother wasn't the only person to end up in a Unitarian Universalist church because she felt stifled or constrained by the tradition she was raised in. That's how my mother told that story, from oppression into freedom. What's unsaid, at least sometimes, is that not everybody has the same freedom to choose. 2 summers ago, my then for the first time pregnant wife and I, both U.S. citizens, went on a trip to Mexico. And we decided on our way back to walk across the border right back into the United States. Our passports gave us that choice. But is that choice available to everyone? When I drive home to see my family in D.C., what choices do I have about how fast to drive or about what to say to a cop when I get pulled over? And does everyone have those same choices? In my job, even in my job at church, I can meet privately with my boss. I can avoid harassment and abuse, and what I say will be believed. But does everyone have those same choices? Now, thinking through these things doesn't solve all those big problems. But in a tradition that prizes our ability to choose, it was worth investigating why some people get choices that other ones don't. For 20-year-old UU me, it was an act of Unitarian Universalist piety, making my search for truth and meaning a more responsible one, to notice what I could choose and how the things we don't think of as choices shape us anyway. I found that as a person decisively shaped by male supremacy, white supremacy, straight supremacy in this society, that nothing I did could claim innocence. Now, we don't have the hours it would tell, and I don't think my wife has the hours and hours it would tell, for me to tell the full story of how I went from UU to Christian. But this is where it starts, with a growing recognition as a young adult of the ways that the things I now call sin, of violence, racism, economic and sexual exploitation, and of all the ways in which it pervades everything, even me. Now, the point isn't that my path is one that anyone else should follow. The point certainly isn't that everyone should go out and become a Christian or an Episcopalian. God knows we've got our own problems. The point is that if we're serious about a responsible search for truth and meaning, if we're serious about the worth and dignity of every person, if we're serious about our interconnectedness, and those are the things that my UU church taught me that come with me everywhere I go. If we're serious about those things, then we have to be prepared to risk some of the things we cherish the most. Because even entering into the conversations we need to create a world in which Black Lives Matter, a world in which everyone has access to the resources they need, a world free from violence, harassment, and abuse, A world in which the richness of every gender and every sexuality can express itself as it will. Even entering into those conversations might mean giving up the most you thing of all. The right to absolute self-determination. To say that, even just to say that, feels funny. It feels like a betrayal of my mother, who left rural Oklahoma to determine her own course, and who worked hard every day of her life at her job and in her church so that her children could also choose. The story of going from constraint to freedom is a story we tell ourselves over and over again about what has always made America great. And it's the same story I think we hear and tell ourselves about what has made UUism great. And I wonder if that similarity between what makes America great or great again and what makes Unitarian Universalism great should maybe give us a moment's pause. I remember a seminary classmate of mine, a black woman, saying to me, "Your freedom isn't for me. The thing that I, Benjamin, recognize as freedom isn't for her, a black woman. Not, I'm not free. Not, that freedom sounds good and I would like some. But there's something wrong with your idea of freedom. My freedom to enter into conversations on my terms is at the expense of her ability to enter conversations on her terms, at least sometimes. Freedom meant freedom to own slaves before it meant freedom for slaves. So one thing I take away from her story is that we have to ask who our idea of freedom is for. What work is that idea doing? And what consequences does it have? Your idea of freedom, she was saying, is about freedom of action for yourself, but not about who you're responsible to. And that was convicting for me. As a person who thought that freedom of choice in every part of life was not only my right as a human being, but an ultimate good. And as her words have turned in my mind over and over, what I begin to wonder is this. In the end, what exactly makes our idea of freedom and the choices we ought to make different from the one peddled as making America great again? For those of us who share some version of that story, of escaping authority, have we lost our accountability to one another along the way? So yes, we should denounce an idea of freedom that wants us to return to times in which women and people of color had fewer choices and neighborhoods and jobs weren't available to everyone. We can and we should deplore mass incarceration and deportations. But what exactly makes the walls we build to guard our own autonomy different from the ones planned for our southern border? So maybe a different question will help. Not whose authority can we get away from, but who else can we make ourselves accountable to? Who else can we make ourselves responsive and responsible to? For me, and this is just for me, an important part of my own journey into Christian life has been recognizing more and more the ways in which choosing to let others choose is part of how I and the people I love get saved. But it's the values I learned in my UU church growing up that made me take that interconnectedness seriously. The seventh principle of Unitarian Universalism has driven me there. And I don't think anybody needs to end up a Christian to take that seriously. Because the truth is, there are lots of people every day that we're not accountable to. Whoever that is in our own lives, there are times when being accountable to that person, listening to them, operating on the basis of being together with those folks over there seems like an overwhelming, bitter burden. An infringement on our right to, damn it, decide for ourselves. Everything in our politics, in our culture, even sometimes the people we call our friends, they tell us that a person's freedom and joy is found in escaping one another. That making ourselves great relies on drawing people out of the circle. If I buy myself with the high fence, if I keep the wrong people out of my country or my church, if there is a business or a book or a Fifth Avenue tower with my name on it, then I can finally be happy and free. Even my mother's story growing up is a version of that story. That there were parts of her life, of church growing up, of the place where she came from, that she needed to escape. If she could have a church where no one is telling her what to do, then she could finally be saved from hell. And hell really is other people. If I can build a concrete wall against my Mexican neighbor, or a theological wall against heretics, or a church wall like this one against people too different, then salvation can finally be mine. But I think, looking back, my mother's classic UU story of escaping the authoritarianism of her Baptist church growing up and finding the freedom of her UU church, I think there is another way to tell that story. The choice of the UU church for her was only partly about what she was escaping. I think it was also a search for some accountability. I think she was choosing to be in a place that would see her friend David as a full human being, and that any community that couldn't see that wasn't worth her investment of time and energy and money and faith. She made his life, and not just her own, a central criterion for who and how she would make her way in the world. As a husband, I am deeply interconnected with my wife, Melissa, which I'm especially conscious of right now. As a parent, I'm deeply connected with my 2.5-year-old, Simon. And by taking vows of marriage and accepting the responsibilities of parenthood, I have committed myself to limiting my own choices. I can't move to a different city or take just any job or do whatever I want on a Saturday night, because the ways in which those choices affect my wife and my child are really clear. But the UU seventh principle, the deep interconnectedness of all things, pushes me to extend the boundaries of those vows. It means in my work for peace with justice that my desire to be the hero has to be constrained. It means as a white person sometimes following the lead of black people. It means as a man following the lead of women. It means as a straight person following the lead of gay and lesbian people. It means as a person who has never felt or experienced any disconnect between the sex assigned to me at birth and the gender I perceive myself to be, as a cisgender person, I have to follow the lead of my transgender comrades. I think there is good news in all of this. It can sound so dutiful and dour. The ways in which I'm accountable to my partner, though, are not bitter burdens. The ways in which my mother was accountable to David was not experienced as a trial, but as a divinely given source of delight. The ways in which we are accountable to our neighbors who are immigrants, our neighbors who are poor, our neighbors who are felons, who are Christian or Muslim, Republican, Democrat, even maybe our fellow members of the Unitarian Society of Richwood who have different priorities and different hopes. Maybe those can be great joys too. and to learn how to treat them as joys. We can look to our relationships with our friends and our partners and our children that are already sources of both accountability and joy. My accountability to those I love the most is not a grim act of duty, but a deep, free, and life-giving joy. The kind where the circle of friends drawn together by my partner and me is richer than either of our circles by itself. Where my young child is more alive for all the difference and disagreement between me and Melissa and his many godparents. When worship is richer, freer, and holier because it's not all just for me. When deciding together is more free, not less, than just getting my own way. When it's not about who we escape from, but who we let come with us, and who we let take us with them. As a person who is no longer in the UU world, but loves it and cherishes what it gave me, that is my hope for what Unitarian Universalism can be, and can help me bring wherever I go. We can think of choosing as a thing we always do together. We can be committed to the choices we make together rather than what I myself alone might do. We can cram as many people inside of we as we can. And we can be determined to stick it out together, whether or not I get my way. And that, I think, is good news for Christians, for Unitarian Universalists, for Muslims and Buddhists and Jews, for those who proclaim the holy by whatever name or by none. That is good news. We can go there together. Amen.